The following is a seminar entitled Uttama Bhakti, Part 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on March 25th, 2010, in Radadesh, Belgium.
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yuga Shri Jiva Gopalako Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yuga Shri Jiva Gopalako. We are dependent upon the mercy of these six Goswamis. They have made this vast ocean of Vedic knowledge accessible to us. They have extracted from the unlimitedly vast Vedic ocean the pure essence of that Vedic wisdom, pure devotional service. So, if we want to understand Radha Krishna, if we want to understand Vrindavan, we must go through the teachings of the six Goswamis, which are presented in the most accessible form in this great writing, The Nectar of Devotion, by Srila Prabhupada. So, we are trying to capture in this course something of the essence of Vedic wisdom. So that by the mercy of these six Goswamis, we can be successful in our spiritual progress. In session number 2, we will be studying pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. Now, if you look on your sheets, you will see the printout from the Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada elaborates on this. So we will read and discuss from Prabhupada's wonderful explanation. Srila Rupa Goswami has given a definition of auspiciousness. He says that actual auspiciousness means welfare activities for all the people of the world. At the present moment, groups of people are engaged in welfare activities in terms of society, community, or nation. There's even an attempt to form, in the form of the United Nations, for world health activity. But due to the shortcomings of limited national activities, such a general mass welfare program for the whole world is not practically possible. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is so nice that it can render the highest benefit to the entire human race. Everyone can be attracted by this movement, and everyone can feel the result. Therefore, Rupa Goswami and other learned scholars agree that a broad propaganda program for the Krishna consciousness movement of devotional service all over the world is the highest humanitarian welfare activity. So now we will discuss for some time and then we will come back to the meeting. So, how are we to understand this principle? That pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. In other words, it's beneficial to all living entities throughout the universe. How do we understand this from different angles? One angle, very commonly we hear, when you water the root, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed your belly, the whole body is fed. When you want to nourish your bodily parts, just like the hand requires nutrition, so do you just stick it in the sweet rice and squish it around to get the nutrition for your hand? No. You put the sweet rice in the mouth, it goes to the belly, and then it nourishes the hand. So, when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed the belly, all the bodily parts are nourished. So in this way, when you engage in devotional service, you are performing the highest welfare work for all living entities, not only on this planet, but all the other planets within this universe as well. And not only on all the other planets within this universe, on all the other universes within the entire material existence. And why stop there? There's so many residents of the spiritual sky. When you serve Krishna, you're also serving them too. You're doing Brijabasi Seva, the original Brijabasis in Krishna's pastimes. You're serving them also. So when we do this Krishna conscious activity, it is the highest benefit for all living entities. In other words, even right there in your bead bag, you can do welfare work for all the living entities throughout all of existence just by chanting japa. Can you imagine that? Just in our bead bag, we have a welfare program for the benefit of all living entities throughout all of existence. In fact, Prabhupada makes this point even more emphatic, and this is one of the most amazing purports in all of Prabhupada's writings. Every time I quote it, I myself am dumbfounded by it. I'm just astounded by this statement of Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport. He says there that when a devotee of the Lord chants the holy name without offense, he becomes Jagat Guru. And under his influence, the entire world will take up Krishna consciousness. So what does that say for us struggling neophytes who can hardly keep our mind fixed on the holy name for 30 seconds? Well, what it says is that to the extent that we're able to free ourselves of the nama parads, to that extent we are manifesting a potency for the deliverance of all living entities from the cycle of birth and death. So in other words, Prabhus and Matajis, by chanting Hare Krishna, you're not only acting for your own deliverance, but you are acting for the deliverance of all living entities. So, that's more impetus, extra added impetus to become advanced in our chanting of Hare Krishna. And this mood of, all auspicious mood of benefiting all living entities throughout all of existence, it's very nicely described in the fifth canto, chapter number 18, text number 9 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Svastiyastu vishvasya kala prasiditam jayantabhutani shivam matodiya manaschabhadram bhajatam madhoksaje aveshitam no matarapyahaitaki. May there be good fortune throughout the entire universe. And may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will always think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of him. This is Prahlad Maharaj. He's really a Jagat Guru. He's really thinking about the welfare of all living entities. In fact, Prahlad says, I personally have no anxiety. I'm completely blissed out all the time. Totally blissful. But there's one thing that causes me great distress. And that is the anxiety of all these conditioned souls who are caught up in the cycle of birth and death. So, he's praying like this. So this prayer is a wonderful, wonderful demonstration of this second item of pure devotional service. That it is the beginning of all auspiciousness. So now we'll look at the second paragraph here in your sheet. How the Krishna consciousness movement can attract the attention of the whole world, and how each and every man can feel pleasure in this Krishna consciousness, is stated in the Padma Purana as follows. A person who is engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is to be understood to be doing the best service to the whole world and to be pleasing everyone in the world. In addition to human society, he is pleasing even the trees and animals because they also become attracted by such a movement. A practical example of this was shown by Lord Chaitanya when he was traveling to the forest of Jarakanda in central India for spreading his Sankirtan movement. The tigers, the elephants, the deer, and the other wild animals joined him and were participating in their own ways by chanting and by dancing and chanting Hare Krishna. So but when I joined, my parents weren't very pleased. How can this be true? One could argue. My friends got really angry. I remember one girl I knew when I shaved my head, she got really angry. She was crying. She had tears of anger. She said, "How could you do it?" She saw my shaved head. I was walking down the street. She's just completely angry like anything. You see, she was attached to my long hair. I'm glad I cut it off. So, how Prabhupada can say that it's pleasing to everyone? And we see that so many people are disturbed. The parents get disturbed. "What are you doing, son? What are you doing, my dear daughter? Why are you joining this cult? What is this crazy madness? Is it? How we can say it's pleasing to everyone? Is there some contradiction here in Prabhupada's writings? What is this? How we can say it's pleasing to everyone?" Actually, pleasing to everyone means they're being benefited. They may not realize it now, you see. But I guarantee you that day will come when they will be very, very grateful that you took up Krishna consciousness. Indeed, it is stated in the Shastra that by becoming a pure devotee, then you deliver 21 generations of your family members. So all those family members who complained, they're going to be thanking you. "Thank God you joined the Hare Krishnas, because now I'm here with you in Goloka Vrindavan." You see, "Thank you very much, my dear son." You see. So even though they may not be pleased now, that day will come and they will recognize. And just like we gave the example in session number one, ignore, abhor, and adore. That day will come when people will become widely accepted. You see, that this Krishna consciousness movement, these teachings of Prabhupada, are what saved the world from in its darkest hour of despair, when nobody knew how to solve the problems, and things were getting more and more difficult, and it became a hopeless quagmire how to pull the modern civilization out of its destruction. Prabhupada's teachings were there and it brought a new age of enlightenment to this planet. In fact, it is predicted. Sats jana durjana pangu jadda antagana prema vanyaya dubaila jagatara jana. This Krishna consciousness movement, it is a prema tsunami which is sweeping the whole universe. And it will drown everyone, whether they are lame, invalid, blind, satjana means pious, durjana, impious, everyone will become inundated in this tidal wave, this prema tsunami. That is the prediction of none other than Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Who is he? He's one of the eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual sky. He's a gopi, actually, in Krishna Lila. So do you think he's just writing books whimsically, some flowery language, to convince us to get out on Sankirtan? No. He is Trikala Gya. He can see things perfectly. And he has informed us that actually this Krishna consciousness movement, it will inundate the entire world. So therefore, don't think that the service that you're doing is not all auspicious. Any service you can do for Prabhupada's movement, it is all auspicious. As Parthasarthi Prabhu so nicely was explaining in his wonderful, wonderful Bhagavatam class this morning about cleaning the toilet. Is it? Just by cleaning the toilet, you are acting for the benefit of all living entities throughout all of existence. Cleaning the toilet in Krishna's temple, you see. So we can just imagine what is the great benefit of acting in such a way that you're relieving everyone from their anxieties, you're relieving everyone from their entanglement in the cycle of birth and death. We have practical experience that the more a person is a kripana, the more or miserly, the more he's miserable. One thing I like about English language is the connection between miser and miserable. English does have some redeeming factors. And the one redeeming factor of the English language is the word miserable and the word miser. There's an obvious connection. So, the more you are miser, the more you are miserable. And the less you are miser, the less you are miserable. And even in English slang, I don't know what's current nowadays, but when I was a kid, there was a word creep. He's a real creep. Creepin' up. Creep. So, it's, even English slang was cool, you know. Yeah, that guy's a real creep. Real miser, you know. So the point is, the less we are miser, the more we are thinking of giving, the more we become happy. And then there's the old, you know, the old English novel, Charles Dickens, what was it called? A Christmas Carol? I forget the name of the book, but there was this character named Ebenezer Scrooge. It was the classic miser. And he was so miserable. He was, what was in Christmas? Someone said "Merry Christmas." He would go "Bah, humbug!" You see, get out of here with Christmas. You know, he hated Christmas so much, and he was so miserable. But then he had a transformation. You see, he gave up. He was such a miserable old Scrooge. In fact, the word Scrooge actually has come to mean miser. It's because of that famous novel. He was a real Scrooge. So anyway, this old Ebenezer Scrooge, he got into the mood of the giving spirit. You know, the Christmas is supposed to mean the giving spirit, you know, Vaishnava mood, celebrating the appearance of a pure devotee. He got into more of a giving mood, giving up his miserly mood, and he became very happy. So this is a very good lesson for us. The more we are in the mood of giving, you see, instead of taking, that's how we become happy. And we were talking about English, now we can talk about Sanskrit. And Sanskrit, da, means give, you see. So there's jasho da, kirti da. This da is very prominent in Vrindavan. You see, we have all the da's. One who gives yasho, one who gives fame, you see, one who gives kirti da, yasho da. This is the Vrindavan mood. Giving, 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 giving. Just like Prabhupada's sister Pishima, she was very famous for her mood of giving. She always wanted to cook for the devotees. Of course, it's sometimes pretty heavy what she would cook. Prabhupada said, "You've ruined all my brahmacharis." He would be sleeping the next morning. But anyway, that's another matter. But she loved to cook for the devotees. She used to say, "What will you eat? What will you eat? What will you eat?" She always wanted to serve the devotees, you see. So this mood of giving service, giving service, giving service. Just like I was so happy last night when a couple of the two of our brahmacharis who were here today in the class, they were fasting all day. They brought me my wife Vishnupriya Devi, prasadam, and we said, "Well, now you all take it." They said, "Now we're going to serve the devotees." This is so nice mood. Instead of just thinking, "I've been fasting, now I want to eat." No, let me serve the devotees, you see. This is the mood. The more we can be in this mood of serving the Vaishnavas, serving the conditioned souls by giving them Krishna consciousness, this is all auspiciousness, you see. Benefit for all living entities. Okay, now we will move on to the third paragraph. Furthermore, a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, acting in devotional service, can develop all the good qualities that are generally found in the demigods. It is said by Shukadeva Goswami in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 18th chapter, verse 12, "My dear king, persons who have unflinching faith in Krishna and are without any duplicity can develop all the good qualities of the demigods on account of a devotee's high grade of Krishna consciousness. Even the demigods like to live with them, and therefore it can be understood that the qualities of the demigods are developed within his body." Can you imagine? If you become so advanced in Vaishnava qualities, the demigods want to live with you, and they like to move into your room and live with you. That's what's said here. They want to live with you. And actually, there's an example of this. You may say, "Well, what? Come on, the demigods living with the ISKCON devotee." There's an example. At the original temple in London, the Berry Place Temple, before they got Soho and then later the Manor, you see, Prabhupada told the devotees to make a Vyasa-san for Lord Shiva. Can you imagine that? Prabhupada ordered the devotees to make a Vyasa-san for Lord Shiva in the temple room. You go, what? Why did Prabhupada do that? He said, because Lord Shiva is attending the kirtan. Prabhupada revealed to us, of course we couldn't see, but Prabhupada told us that Lord Shiva was actually attending the kirtans. He was relishing great, great nectar, hearing the devotees chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you see, and dancing in ecstasy. So this is a graphic example in our ISKCON history to further verify the truth of 5.18.12 Bhagavatam, that the demigods like to live with a person who is developing the Vaishnava qualities. So there's another benefit here. Just think about this. Who controls the material nature? You know, the rain, the sun, the wind, everything. The demigod. So just imagine if the demigods are very, very pleased with your devotional service. You think they might pull a few strings here and there to help facilitate your service? Sure. So, this is a very nice thing. If you develop pure bhakti, then the demigods will actually assist you in your service. That's a thing. Okay, we'll go to the next paragraph. On the other hand, a person who, the prophet is really good at giving both sides of the coin here. On the other hand, a person who is not in Krishna consciousness has no good qualities. He may be highly educated from the academic point of view, But in the actual field of his activities, he can be seen to be baser than the animals, even though a person is highly educated academically. If he cannot go beyond the sphere of mental activities, then he is sure to perform only material activities and thus remain impure. There are so many persons in the modern world who have been highly educated in the materialistic universities, but it is seen that they cannot take up the movement of Krishna consciousness and develop the high qualities of the demigods. You mean my PhD is worthless? Well, not necessarily, sir. If you use it for Krishna, then it becomes a very valuable thing. Prabhupada explained that everything in this world, they are zero, that's all. All the things here, they are zero. He was riding in the car through New York City, and he gave example, Empire State Building, Empire State Building, zero. At that time, it was the largest building, I think. It was a very famous building in the old days. The Empire State Building. It was the tallest building. But still, Prabhupada said, zero. You see, so many zeros. United Nations, zero. Empire State Building, zero. Times Square, zero. You see, this thing, zero. The New York Yankees, zero. So many things, zero, 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 zero. You see, Eiffel Tower, zero. You see? Everything in this material world, zero. So if you put all the things in the material world, all the zeros, you line them up along a long line here. What do you have? What did all these zeros add up to? Zero. But if you put a one in front of 10,000 zeros, then you have any mathematicians here? What would that number be? One with 10,000 zeros behind it? Any math majors here? I made straight A's in math, but I didn't major in it. So I don't know. I don't know what a number would be. But it would be a huge number. So many zeros together on their own, they are still zero. But the when you add the one, then every zero multiplies the value of the number by 10. You understand? You take one, you add a zero, it becomes multiplied to 10. And second zero goes to 100, the third zero to 1,000. So every zero multiplies the number by 10. So every zero of this material world, if Krishna is in front of it, that zero enhances the value of this material world 10 times. So if you can simply put Krishna in the center, Ishavashamitam Saravam Yatkincha Jagajam Jagatena Chakchena Bunjita Magrida Krishna Svidhanam. If we can simply put Krishna in the center, then we are sitting in the middle of the most valuable field. In fact, this material world will become non-different from the spiritual world. If you simply put Krishna in the center, you don't have to wait to go back to Godhead. Simply put Krishna in the center of your existence right now, you're already living in Godhead. If you do that, that is pure bhakti. And then Prabhupada elaborates further how this, the person who is not Krishna conscious is not very well situated. He says, for example, a Krishna conscious boy, even if he is not very well educated, he's going back to the other side now. Yeah, that's right. A Krishna conscious boy, even if he is not very well educated by the university standard, can immediately give up illicit sex, gambling, meat-eating, and intoxication, whereas those who are not in Krishna consciousness, although very highly educated, are often drunkards, meat-eaters, sex-mongers, and gamblers. There are practical proofs of how a Krishna-conscious person becomes highly developed in good qualities, whereas a person who is not in Krishna consciousness cannot do so. We experience that even a young boy in Krishna consciousness is unattached to cinemas, nightclubs, naked dance shows, restaurants, liquor shops, etc. He becomes completely freed. He saves his valuable time from being extravagantly spent in the way of smoking, drinking, attending the theater, and dancing. Some of the leaders of our Krishna consciousness movement, they dropped out of the university. They didn't even finish their degree. You see. But they developed all saintly qualities by following the path of pure bhakti. So even without having a university degree, they are better off than any PhD. I was just reading the other day, my wonderful godbrother, Giriraj Swami. He was explaining about his circle of friends that he moved in as when he was a college student in Boston. Every weekend, everybody would try to find something to enjoy, you know. A date, go on a date with a good-looking girl, or you know, go to a concert, you know, Jimi Hendrix concert. Or, you know, everybody was looking for something to do so they could say, "Yeah, I did this." You know, or I got drunk, or you know, I took an LSD trip, or you know, everybody had their thing that they would report to, all their bragging thing what they did that weekend to enjoy. But our Giriraj Swami, he said he didn't find any of those things to be enjoyable. And he met the devotees and he actually found that real enjoyment, you see. So they are trying to enjoy in these ways, you see. I remember when I was in college, we had one fellow in our dormitory. We used to call him the bear. His thing was asleep. You know, just studying hard all week, you know, on Friday night he would just go to sleep and he would get up. He wanted to see how many hours he could sleep. That was his thing. He went a sleeping marathon. He'd get up like Saturday afternoon, you know. And it was like a joke in the dormitory. But, you know, that was his thing. If I can just sleep, 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 sleep. So, in this way, people are trying to enjoy life through this sense gratification, indriya seva. So why it doesn't satisfy? What is the difficulty? I mean, don't your senses get titillated? Sure they do. So why are we so much criticizing sense gratification? Isn't it instantly pleasurable? Sure it is. So why are we so much criticizing? Why are we keep knocking it all the time, sense gratification? Well, we understand from our beloved Lord Krishna that sense gratification is happiness in the mode of passion. It's very sweet in the beginning, but in the end, bitter poison, you see. We are more interested in moving uptown to the realm of sattvic pleasure, you see. Yatta dagda visham viva pariname mritopamam tatsukam sapikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. That's the neighborhood we like to live in. Moving out of the ghetto, moving into the neighborhood of sattvic pleasure. Because even though that pleasure is, as Krishna says, sometimes may be described as being poison in the beginning, but in the end, it becomes sweeter than the sweetest honey. You see? And it awakens one to self-realization. So, our Giriraj, he tasted that pleasure with the devotees. that happiness in the mode of goodness. You may say, but how does that work? I mean, if it's poison in the beginning, how any of us would come to Krishna consciousness? Well, Lord Chaitanya is very kind. He gives a lot of sneak previews. Because transcendental happiness, you see, happiness in the mode of ignorance is misery in the beginning and misery in the end. Happiness in the mode of passion is bliss in the beginning and misery in the end. Happiness in the mode of goodness is poison in the beginning and bliss in the end. And happiness in pure goodness is bliss in the beginning and ever even more bliss in the end. You see, that's the difference between the four kinds of happiness. So, Lord Chaitanya is very kind. He gives a lot of transcendental bliss in the very beginning, even though we don't really deserve it yet, therefore it is called causeless mercy. This reminds me of Prabhupada's program at 22nd Avenue. He used to have a jar filled up with gulab jamun. And the program was, anytime you fell into Maya, you can go have a gulab jamun. I'm really in anxiety. Oh, gulab jamun. Instant bliss. So that is because we have a lot of mercy in the form of kirtan, in the form of wonderful devotee relationships, in the form of prasadam, you see, in the form of beautiful deity worship, just heart melting deity worship, beautiful, beautiful deities, especially here in Radhadesh. I preach all over the world, and I tell you, this is one of the most amazing temples I've ever seen. It's so amazing to see how beautiful the deities are. How Krishna is actually here, having his eternal lila right here. So amazingly beautiful deities you have here. So anyway, we'll go to the next paragraph now. One who is not in Krishna consciousness usually cannot sit silently even for half an hour. The yoga system teaches that if you become silent, you will realize that you are God. This system may be all right for materialistic persons, but how long will they be able to keep themselves silent? Artificially, they may sit down for so-called meditation, but immediately after their yogic performance, they will engage themselves again in such activities as illicit sex life, gambling, meat eating, and many other nonsensical things. But a Krishna conscious person gradually elevates himself without endeavoring for this so-called silent meditation. Simply because he is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he automatically gives up all this nonsense and develops a high character. One who develops the highest character by becoming a pure devotee of Krishna. Conclusion is that no one can truly have any good qualities if he is lacking Krishna consciousness. Now this is a sore point of our philosophy for many people. Do you mean to say that nobody has any good qualities unless they're a devotee? I mean, they can start naming off different people in this material world. But how you can say that? You people are a bunch of fanatics. How you can say such things? You see, they can criticize like that. So, what is the proper understanding? Of course, Prabhupada explains it from both sides. He sometimes gives credit also, you see. The philanthropists, the humanitarianists, they are doing some service. He even explains in the, see, Krishna, or maybe it's in the shloka itself, but it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that if you can't take the devotional service, then take to some kind of humanitarian welfare work, because it gives up it helps you become free from, you know, miserliness. So it's not that we totally write it off as bad. There is value in this humanitarian welfare work. There is value. We don't completely write it off as a bad thing. But from the ultimate, we have to also, from the relevant perspective, it's relatively good, because it's helping people to get free of selfishness, greediness, self-centeredness, it's very good. But the difficulty is, it's not purely free from self-centeredness. That's the problem. Because a person who is not a pure devotee, even though he does all kinds of humanitarian welfare activities, he wants to be appreciated. I am great. You see. He can't get free of that desire of being appreciated as being great for what he's doing. You see, that's the problem with it. And we see so many examples just in the news, it comes up from time to time. And some person goes on a rampage in his office. He'll come in with a gun, he'll shoot the boss, you shoot the assistant boss, you shoot about 10 or 20 of his co-workers, and then shoot himself. And then they'll say, but he was such a nice person. He was so friendly. Actually, it even happened in Austin, where I'm based. Some fellow got on an airplane. We have, in the U.S., our taxing agency of the U.S. government is called the IRS. They're the ones who tax you. Anyway, he got an airplane and he flew it right into the IRS building, committed suicide. He wanted to kill as many IRS workers as he could when he took his own life. Because he had some big debt to the IRS. But they said he was such a nice guy. They interviewed some of his friends. He played in a rock band. He said, yeah, he was such a friendly guy. No one had any idea he had this storm going on inside his heart of hatred for the U.S. government and for the IRS, that he would actually take an airplane and fly right, it happened just a few miles away from our house. He just flew right into the office building. It just so happened that he had a day off that day. He didn't know it. He made a mistake. He only killed one person along with himself. He was hoping to get a whole bunch of them, apparently, but he only killed one person because practically everybody had a day off that day. The office was closed. So we see that in the material world, even someone does so much good. Well, there was another example, a person in Kansas. He was like a leader in the church. He was a well-respected leader in the church, but behind the scenes, he was a murderer. He was a serial murderer. He had two sides to his personality. He would he would torture and murder women. It was going on for years. They finally caught him. And it was shocking because he was a leading member of his local church. So the point is that one may make a show of being a very good person, but the only way you can really fully make yourself a true saintly person, completely pure saintly person, is by coming to the point of pure devotional service. So what is it you say? But he went to church. So what's the difference? He worshipped God. He was a respected leading member of his church. He went every Sunday. He sang the praises of the Lord. He bowed down. He did everything like everybody else. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that we many times have heard in Prabhupada's wonderful teachings. You can fully surrender yourself to the Lord. You can approach Him in that way, which is pure bhakti, or you can approach the Lord and take Him as your order supplier. Give me this, give me that, give me, give me, give me. I'm devoted to you because by my devotion you're going to give me this, that, this and that, and this and that. And if you don't give me, my Lord, I will teach you a good lesson. I will become atheist. So, even though they are called Kanishta Adhikari, they are approaching God to fulfill their material desires. And of course, they're better than atheists. But they can easily become atheists. If they see that they're not getting their material desires fulfilled by the Lord, they will become atheists. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of those ladies. Actually, one of his godbrothers, who was from Germany, explained that during the World War II, Hitler was sending all the men to the battlefield, the fathers, the husbands, the brothers, the sons. He was sending everybody out, especially near the end. And they were getting decimated. So the women, they were back at home, and they were going to the church saying, "Dear God, please let my father, my brother, my husband and my sons come back from the war." And they didn't come back from the war, then there was wide-scale atheism after World War II. So, as long as we approach God like this, you see, that is not pure bhakti. And it will never satisfy us. Ahai tukhiya pratiyata yayatma supra siddhati. Devotional service must be 24/7, and it must be without any desire of getting something for my own sense gratification. Only then will one become satisfied by it. So in this course, we are presenting the pure bhakti given by Prabhupada. Because, as we explained in session number one, by developing this mood of pure bhakti, then Krishna becomes your possession. And you cannot be lacking in anything. So why bother God? Give me this, give me that, you see? Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadishari. So, you see, I'm not picking on the Hindus, but every religion, the Muslim, the Christian, the Hindus, everyone, the Jews, everyone is going to God, give me this, give me that. I was raised as a Christian, and my parents taught me. One Christmas, they said, "Well, little Stevie, what do you want for Christmas?" "Well, I like some cowboy boots." They said, "Well, you pray to God for cowboy boots. Every day you must pray to God for cowboy boots." So my mother told me, and every day would say, "Dear God, please give me a pair of cowboy boots for Christmas." And sure enough, there they were on Christmas morning. God gave me the cowboy boots. You see. So what kind of training is this? That's how I was trained. They wanted me to believe in God, so they thought by bribing me with a pair of cowboy boots, they could teach me to believe in God. What kind of nonsense is that? Can that cowboy boot God consciousness satisfy the self? You see? No. God satisfied. But this pure bhakti, that can satisfy. So this is not on the... I apologize that these quotes from the Nectar Devotion lectures are not on the sheet. I just added them yesterday afternoon at the last minute, looking to cram more nectar into this this mini course. So I apologize they're not in your notes. But now I'm going to read the... Prabhupada gave a few sentences about this second aspect, the beginning of all auspiciousness, in his Nectar Devotion lecture on November 3rd. It's not in the sheet. Just hear carefully. So, pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. All auspiciousness means to go back home, back to Godhead. So, if we stick to pure devotional service, follow the rules and regulations, chant 16 rounds, be engaged always in the service of the Lord, then ultimate gain is that caktva deham punar janma naiti mam meti sodarjana. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Of course, that's jumping ahead to the next one. That's the next session. Starting at 4 o'clock will be how to get in transcendental pleasure. So anyway, Prabhupada says transcendental pleasure and material pleasure, there is difference. Now, I'll save this for the next session, because this is actually, now Prabhupada's jumping into the next topic. I'll save it and read that in the next section. Yeah. So, is there any question? Everyone satisfied? Yes, Prabhu.
I actually have one question. When you mention this, often I hear devotees speak about this. Everything can change to be like the spiritual world. But my question is, should we not consider we still is in the material world and the motor? We can stop it by chanting and do so, but we still have to see that there's some rotation running. Our old karma is still running.
Help me, what was the question?
The way it is, we have our old karma, we have our karma goal, we stop it by chanting and do some favorite service. And in that way, when we have stopped it, and we believe we are, now actually I'm in the spiritual world, as you were telling us. But I said, it's not really dangerous to believe so, because our old karma is still running. We are not making more karma, but we have stopped our karma, but still the old karma is still running. It will never be like the spiritual world to consider I'm in the spiritual world now, attending Hare Krishna, I joined with a good Krishna friend and everything.
Can somebody help me understand? Can someone help me understand what he's asking?
The old karma?
If you are into the three modes of the material world, you make karma. When you chant Hare Krishna, you are out of karma, you are in the transcendental situation. And in that way, when you stop the material, three modes of material nature, you stop by chanting, by making service, this is not giving karma. It releases us from karma. Because when you were he was telling us we can continually think about we are in the spiritual world now because I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm doing things. Actually, here I agree that I'm in a Vayagun, but if there can still happen some accidents, if we have
I can understand the question, I'll be happy to answer it. So.
And he's saying that
what we can do in the next session is everyone can write down questions on a piece of paper. It makes it much easier for me. In next session, but go ahead.
Correctly, maybe you can correct me if I'm saying something
wrong.
He says when we are in the material consciousness, we have a lot of karma, and by chanting we overcome the karma, and then we are engaged in the devotional service. Am I correct?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, yeah. When we are in the devotional service, if we start thinking that we are in the spiritual world, and we go on doing our nonsense also at the same time. So how can we think that we are in the spiritual world all the time? Aren't we committing more karma?
Yes. So when
you
this is
off, right?
one has to one has to be careful of sahajism, thinking one is already liberated. that. Therefore, we have to go step by step, and very carefully step by step. The first step is to understand how much we are suffering within the material modes of nature. It's like in the Bhagavatam, it's not that we immediately jump to the 10th canto. We have to understand how much we are caught up right now in the modes of material nature, how much we are suffering within adi-atmic, adi-bhautic, adi-daivic. It's very, very essential that we have a very in-depth understanding of our diseased condition. If I imagine myself to already be healed while I'm still sick, then what will I do? Then I will do things that will actually continue to make me keep me sick. Just like a sick man, he has a very strict diet from the doctor. Now, if he foolishly thinks he's already healthy, and he gives up his diet, then he's simply prolonging his disease. So, when the sick man, he cannot artificially jump to a healthy man's diet. He must follow very strictly. So, in our Krishna consciousness process, we have our rules and regulations. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. Rise early in the morning, attend Mangal Arti. So many items are there, given by the Goswamis and given by Prabhupada. So we are meant to follow these rules and regulations very carefully. In fact, even a liberated soul, one who no longer is obliged to follow such rules and regulations, it is stated that he will also follow, to show a perfect example for those who require to follow them. So, we should never think, oh, now, by Prabhupada's mercy, you know, I'm liberated soul, and I can do anything and everything. We should think, by Prabhupada's mercy, now I have been given the pathway of liberation, and I must be very, very, very careful not to deviate from this pathway of liberation. You see? Actually, Prabhupada summarizes this in his wonderful lecture he gave on an initiation ceremony in Los Angeles. He said that deathlessness begins from the moment of initiation. So that means as soon as you get the beads, you're liberated. You've achieved immortality. But there's a heavy warning that comes along with it, provided you strictly follow. Because if there's any deviation, then you lose it, you see. You were given immortality. Prabhupada said, immortality, deathlessness begins from the very day of initiation. So you were liberated. But if there's any deviation, then back again you fall into the modes of nature, the material existence. So the fact that Prabhupada is the spiritual master liberates us by giving us diksha doesn't mean now we can do anything. No, we can lose that liberation immediately. As soon as we deviate from these principles, immediately we lose everything. But we are living in immortality from the very moment of diksha. If we strictly follow 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the instructions we have received. That's a fact. Does that help?
And that's okay.
Does that address the issue?
Yes, of course, I live in immortality when I'm engaged in Krishna service and so on. But there's one thing I pointed out, because when you mentioned it for me before, it sounds so delightful. There's nothing to be afraid of. And that's why I want to point out, you have to take care of the task and not try not to make an accident.
He's saying that when we think that we are liberated and we start acting, so he wanted to bring out this point to you, that when you said that we are liberated and we are like into Krishna's pastimes, so we have to be careful. You got
no, this ISKCON movement is a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. It's a part of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Prabhupada is, but that means you have to, even in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, look at his, what was that servant's name, Krishna Das? He was the personal servant of Lord Chaitanya. But yet he was those gypsies, the Bataharis. He was lured by a gypsy woman and gave up Chaitanya's association and joined the Batahari, the gypsy Batahari camp. Can you imagine? He was Lord Chaitanya's personal servant, even though he was living with Lord Chaitanya. So there is danger at every step. You see, one has to be very careful. You see.
He was in Sangatam, very fresh man and so on. But on way home on Sangatam, they had fallen something and certainly they had an accident. So then he go and damage his car, not. But he still can make service and is immortal, liberated, but he has some problems with his body now.
He's talking about some Sankirtan devotee who went on with Sankirtan, he had an accident and he had some problems. Is that correct?
Yeah, but samashuta ye palava plava pavam pahamahat putang punjusho murare bavambudir vatsa param padam vadam 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 yam vadam nate sham. By taking shelter of the boat, the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and who is celebrated for being the annihilator of that rascal named Muda. This vast, insurmountable ocean of material existence becomes reduced down to the amount of water within the hoof of a cat. The aim, the destination of such a person who has taken shelter of that boat is the Parampradam, the Vaikuntha realm, not that place where there is danger at every step. So, if one actually takes shelter of Krishna, then that the material world becomes insignificant, a little puddle, that's all. But if you give up that shelter, that little puddle becomes a big ocean again. So we have to always be very careful. Padam padam yad vipadam te sham. There is danger at every step. So now our time is up, and we will reconvene again for another for an hour and a half session of pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. So we'll see you all again at 4 p.m. Thank you very much. Nectar of devotion, ki jai. Jiva Bhavad, ki jai.